This is how flying should be. That's what a Breeze guest recently said about Breeze Airways. Breeze flies nonstop to Sarasota, Bradenton, and more straight from Long Island MacArthur Airport. Breeze not only makes travel easy and affordable, but they offer flexible and friendly change policies, have high-speed Wi-Fi, and a premium first-class seat called Breeze Ascent. It's time you choose to fly Breeze. What are you waiting for? Book your flight today at flybreeze.com. Breeze Airways, seriously nice, in partnership with Visit Bradenton.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Monday afternoon, February 3rd. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. It's a busy week ahead on Wall Street as markets slip amid Trump tariffs. A host of companies release quarterly earnings, and a flurry of data will be capped off by Friday's government jobs report for January. Joining us with a preview is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And let's take the last part first, and that is the government jobs report for Friday morning. What are the consensus estimates about hiring in the month of January?
So the consensus estimate is for job gains of about 165,000. We're a little bit stronger at 170,000. That's a good solid number. It's a little bit softer than what we saw in November and December, but still consistent with underlying growth in the labor force. And then we expect to see the unemployment rate hold steady at 4.1%. That matches the consensus. Historically low unemployment rate in the labor market is in all accounts is in very good shape in early 2025.
And Thursday, of course, we have the report on first-time unemployment benefits. And there, once again, I mean, just underlying how strong this job market is, no signs of trouble, it seems like, as far as the number of people who are losing their jobs, unfortunately.
That's right. We continue to see claims running around 200,000, a little bit above for people who are applying for first-time benefits. That's a very low number, particularly given the fact that the labor force is increasing over time. And there's just no indication out there that businesses are laying off workers in any substantial numbers.
So today we have reports on construction spending, manufacturing, which surprised to the upside, and auto sales. So what are some of the highlights out of the numbers to come out today?
We had a very good number for manufacturing. So the ISM manufacturing index was above 50, which indicates expansion for the first time in a couple of years. So very strong growth there. Well, not strong growth, but certainly better growth. I think that's a reflection of the lower interest rates we've had over the past 6 months or so. And then construction spending was up. So particularly on the residential side, mortgage rates appear to have peaked. There's still demand for housing out there. So what we call the goods-producing side of the economy, construction, manufacturing, that's looking a little bit better in early 2025.
And then, of course, Wednesday, we have the private payroll report, which doesn't really have the predictive power it used to about what the Friday government jobs report is going to say. But we also have numbers on the services sector and the trade deficit. And I want to zero in on the trade deficit because that's a term that's going to be kicked around quite a bit, and especially this week with tariffs and trade on the mind. But for those of us who don't know, what is the trade deficit? And where do we expect it to land this week?
So the trade deficit is imports minus exports. So typically we as a country import more than we export. So we run a trade deficit. That allows us to have access to goods from all over the world at lower prices than what we can have produce here in the United States. The trade deficit has been increasing at the end of 2024. We've been importing a lot, but we've also been exporting more as the global economy turns around. But I would expect that, you know, the trade deficit is likely to be a negative for growth in early 2025. I think obviously President Trump is trying to reduce the trade deficit, but there's only so much that he can do. It's like a balloon. If you push it in one direction, it's just going to expand in the other direction. And I think we're likely to run continued big trade deficits in the near term, no matter what efforts President Trump puts in there.
Yeah, basically, we're a big country with a lot of people and a voracious appetite for stuff.
That's exactly right. And we can't produce all that stuff in the U.S., it's produced abroad and brought into the U.S.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, we'll take a look at the potential impact of U.S. tariffs on the auto industry.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
President Trump has announced a one-month pause in tariffs on products from Mexico, but for now, tariffs on items from Canada and China are set to take effect overnight. Let's talk about what this could mean for the auto industry with Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter based in Detroit. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And really, in this day and age, there's no such thing as a fully American car. And conversely, there's no such thing as a fully foreign car either, because cars that are made in the U.S. have a lot of foreign sourced parts, and a lot of cars made in Canada or Mexico have American parts. So what does this tariff dance mean for the automotive industry and the process of actually putting cars together?
Well, you know, it's part of it is the parts, but the other part is where the vehicles are manufactured. Okay, so Mexico has delayed their tariffs. That's good news for the Chevy Blazer and the Ford Maverick that are made in Mexico. But Canada, we haven't seen a delay yet. Maybe bad news for a Chrysler minivan that's made in Ontario. So, and then take a look at a GM pickup truck. They make pickup trucks in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. So just because a vehicle has a certain badge on it from a certain company, that doesn't necessarily mean it was made in that country.
And there are instances in which parts or partially assembled vehicles go back and forth over the border multiple times. And what is the tariff regime for that particular situation right now? And how would Canadian tariffs impact that going forward if they were to be imposed?
Well, it is such a complex situation. I think the car makers still have to figure that out. Take a look at Ford. The F-150 pickup, which is made in Dearborn, Michigan, uses an engine that's made in Windsor, Ontario, but that engine uses parts that come back over the border, in many cases from the United States or even Mexico. So you can start to see how elaborate and how difficult this is.
And then at the same time, though, we've done this dance before. It did happen during the first Trump administration, 2017 to 2021, threats to impose tariffs on Canada and Mexico. And then they go up to the brink, you know, maybe hours away from the announcement, and they're pulled away. So how do the car companies deal with this uncertainty, or they just learn to live with it?
Well, I think they're dealing with this like they would deal with, say, a strike threat from the United Auto Workers Union. You know, they try to prevent it, and if it happens, they try to mitigate it, but they also try to figure out how long they're going to need to do that mitigation, because I don't think anybody expects tariffs to be forever, even if they're imposed. If they go a week or so, well, maybe it's a hit to the bottom line. If they go several years, then maybe they have to change where they produce some things. So they're making contingency plans all over the place, but it's too early to implement any of them.
And then what does it also mean? There was the discussion of possibly imposing tariffs or increasing tariffs on goods from the European Union. So that is one more sector of the auto industry that could be potentially impacted by these tariffs if they were to be implemented.
Yeah, not a lot of auto parts come from Europe. Most of the auto parts would come from Asia or from Canada and Mexico, but a number of vehicles come over, particularly for European brands. But let's not forget that a lot of BMWs and Mercedes that are sold in Europe are actually made here in the U.S., particularly their profitable SUVs. So there likely would be retaliation if that happens.
When it's all said and done, if these tariffs do go through and the car makers had to figure out how to absorb some costs or pass them along, what could this potentially mean for somebody who's thinking about buying a car right now?
It's hard to tell. Early on, they're going to have to absorb it because the biggest issue right now is affordability, and car makers don't want to push up prices too much. But if it gets to the point where it's going to really eat into their profits, they're going to have to, and they're going to have to look at how that would impact sales, because the price of a vehicle is only partially based on what it costs to make that vehicle. I mean, a lot of it is supply and demand. And if buyers will not pay increased prices, then car makers can't pass those prices along.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive correspondent based in Detroit, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, some clarity on who qualifies for a home office tax deduction.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Working from home doesn't automatically qualify you for home office tax deductions. Joining us to explain is Elizabeth Bafardi, founder of Crescendo Financial Planners in Oak Brook. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us today. And tax time is here, and we're all looking for ways to mitigate that hit from Uncle Sam, or potentially make that refund a little more generous. And one place to do that is to look for more tax deductions. And if you work from home some or part of the time, you might say to yourself, well, this is my office. I can deduct all of my living expenses from my home office. And my question for you, Elizabeth, is can you do that?
Not exactly, or certainly not the way that you're describing.
I mean, what are some ways in which people try to write off work from home expenses, and what pass the test and what don't?
So in order to be able to write off, you know, your home office, one, it has to be used exclusively for business. And so it's not like you can just have your laptop perched on your dining room table and then you clear it off each night when you're going to have dinner. The other thing, too, is that you can't you can only have a home office deduction if you're self-employed. So if you're one of those people that have a side hustle going on, you know, as opposed to your, I'll say, your day job, then you might be able to write off part of your home office for the side hustle, but not for just working at home as a regular employee.
Now, the other thing to keep in mind, too, is how much, if you itemize and you do have that side hustle, or, you know, you basically own a business that operates out of your home, what can be written off, and then when do you just bump into the standard deduction, or is this on top of the standard deduction?
This would be on top of the standard deduction, because it's gonna take into consideration your mortgage if you have one, rent if you're a renter, real estate taxes, utilities, that sort of thing. So it's gonna take into consideration different things than maybe what you would use to itemize.
Now, the writing off expenses from working out of your home, how did that change prior to the 2017 tax cut measure that was passed by Congress and signed into law by the president? And what changes could come potentially in a new tax deal once that previous tax cut bill expires?
So in the past, like like 2017 and before that, I think it was, you could have unreimbursed business expenses. So basically you could write, you as a work-at-home person who's an employee, not necessarily self-employed, could write off part of the home office deduction that way. But it would also be subject to 2% of your AGI, and it would go on your itemized deduction schedule, Schedule A. So when they changed the law, they made it where only self-employed people could write off part of their house for their home office.
And this was before anybody could imagine something like COVID-19 coming along, forcing work from home for everybody.
Exactly. Exactly.
Elizabeth Bafardi, founder of Crescendo Financial Planners in Oak Brook, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead, planning a spring training trip to Arizona, plus some suggestions from our Monday stock picker.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One night, one goal, stop suicide. On June 21st, New York City will host the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's milestone 30th Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk. Over the last 20 years, people have described the overnight as one of the most powerful experiences of their lives. Now is the perfect time to join us as people from all over the country come together to stop suicide. Walk over 16 miles from dusk till dawn to raise much-needed funds for this important cause. You'll form lasting friendships, experience healing and love, and bring hope to those affected by suicide. Be a part of this life-changing event. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's Out of the Darkness Overnight Walk. June 21st. Register now at theovernight.org or call 888-THE-OVERNIGHT. That's 888-843-6837.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. This week, it's all about buy five and get five free when you buy 10 mix and match participating items. Here are just a few. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Pepsi, or Smartwater beverages of various sizes. 16-count fresh baked cookies and pint-sized Ben & Jerry's ice cream, as well as 6 mega or 12 double rolls of Signature Select soft and strong bath tissue and 6 rolls of Brightly paper towels selected varieties. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Trump will pause tariffs against Mexico after the country's president takes action regarding enforcement at the U.S.-Mexico border. A suspect in the killing of a man outside of a rap concert in Chicago last fall is due in court today. Spring training just around the corner, but there's still some time for Cubs and White Sox fans to line up a trip to Arizona. And it's Stock Picker Monday, we'll get some investing ideas from a money pro. WBBM Business markets are lower. The Dow down 95 points, NASDAQ down 230, and the S&P 500 is down 44. We have 41 degrees right now in Chicago with fog. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. President Trump is holding off on tariffs targeting imports from Mexico for a month after the country's president agreed to send 10,000 troops to the U.S.-Mexico border. He says the goal is to help combat the flow of fentanyl. Tariffs on products from Canada and China are still scheduled to kick in overnight. A man Chicago police believe is responsible for shooting and killing an Elgin teenager outside of a concert at the United Center will be in bond court today.
19-year-old Deron Wolfe has been in custody since Thursday when he was arrested in Rantoul, a town just north of Champaign. Police say he was behind an armed robbery last October, approaching a group who had found parking off-site and were walking to a Lil Durk concert. Two other teenagers were also shot but survived. Wolf faces both murder and armed robbery charges. Sarah Herrera, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are lower today. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street is Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director of Clearstead Advisors based in New York. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And the markets have recovered from the session lows, from the sell-off at the very beginning of the trading day. And certainly a much rosier picture than what the futures markets were telling us last night. So what does this say about how investors are parsing this latest news on tariffs, the 25% tariffs that were threatened against Canada and Mexico?
Yeah, I think what the markets are trying to figure out and game out is, what is Trump's strategy here? Is he going to come on with very heavy threats and intimidation in anticipation of making a quick deal that is to the long-term benefit of the U.S., in which case any weakness will be transitory? Or are we going to trip into something unexpected, which is resistance on the other side, retaliation on the other side, and then we get ourselves into trade friction that can be stagflationary, hurt growth and increase inflation in the economy? So we don't know yet, and the market is reacting to incoming data as incoming news as it becomes available. And as you said, the 30-day pause on Mexico is what took the immediate pressure off the markets.
Now, I think I've said this on this program before, and that is a lot of people are flexing, are learning to flex some muscles that that they utilized between 2017 and 2021, and trying to figure out President Trump's posture, how much of this is real, how much of this is a negotiating tactic, how much of this is, look at this beautiful deal that I have negotiated on behalf for you, the American people. And it seems like today, at least as far as the agreement with President Sheinbaum of Mexico, is that they could have a conversation, Mexico will promise X, and then we'll have a delay. Now, there is going to be a conversation with Prime Minister Trudeau in Canada later today, so is the smart money betting that maybe there the Canadian tariffs will also be kicked down the road for at least a month?
Well, apparently the relationship with Trudeau is a little bit antagonistic, and the Canadians feel a little bit backed up and betrayed. So that could be a more difficult conversation. But you have to say, so far on his negotiation with Colombia, on his negotiation with Panama, on his negotiation with Mexico, the indications are that the negotiations with Greenland are going to go more in the United States' favor, so far that the economic power of the United States is likely to make Trump prevail in these negotiations. But it's not going to be without frictions, bumps, and chances of an accident.
And it also seems like between the general overall Donald Trump economic posture, whether it's 2016 or 2024, plus the Brexit vote, there's just been a larger conversation about the role of free trade in moving the economy along. And at the very least, it seems like people are learning a lesson in what free trade provides you as a consumer and as a participant in this economy.
Yeah, well, we're rethinking free trade because we did have globalization for many decades, and it left us in a situation where the goods that we bought were cheap, but we had a huge trade deficit, federal deficits, dependence on China. And due to national security reasons, we are stepping back from that in terms of reshoring for domestic security reasons, which will lead to higher costs and supply chain dislocations. So we are going through this discussion, and it's likely that there will be less free trade, more protected trade, which means higher prices for consumers. And you can view that as good or bad, depending on your political and economic posture.
Jim Awad, Senior Managing Director, Clearstead Advisors, based in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, take me out to the ball game, Arizona style. It's
compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
As spring training approaches, Cubs and White Sox fans are gearing up to head to Arizona. Joining us to discuss how you can navigate it all, even if you're not a baseball fan, is Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, based in Scottsdale, Arizona, the website travelbta.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. And I would imagine it's the calm before the storm for Arizonans and people who live in the Phoenix area. That's because pitchers and catchers report in a little under 2 weeks. And after that, just a steady stream of baseball fans making their way through Sky Harbor International Airport.
That's correct. And we're already making progress because this is a big week for Arizona with the Phoenix Open, but it really cues us up for a successful spring training.
Now, of course, both the White Sox and Cubs are members of the Cactus League. The Sox are in Glendale. The Cubs are in Mesa at Sloan Park. And as someone who went to Camelback Ranch like 15 years ago for White Sox spring training, the best part about it is you feel like, as a Midwesterner, when it's still cold and gray, just like it is today, you feel like you've unlocked some sort of cheat code, because you go down to Phoenix, the sun's out at 72 degrees, you're wearing shorts in February and March. And even if you're not much of a baseball fan, just the weather at that time of the year in Phoenix sells itself.
I agree. Those lawn seats are our version of maybe a coastal destination, right? Because we're inland. So coming to spring training is the highlight, whether or not you're catching several games, multiple games, because you are that baseball fan, or you're coming to enjoy other aspects of Arizona, whether it's a trip up to Sedona or you're heading south. It's also a popular destination for universities. So people come here for college touring, and it's a great way to also incorporate a spring training game.
Now, the reality is spring training games are over around late in the afternoon, Arizona time. And if your goal is just to see the big league players, the game is effectively over several hours beforehand, because a lot of single A and double A guys end up finishing those triple A games. So you got to think of something to do at night. So what are some things that you can do in Arizona, in and around Phoenix, to really pack in as much fun as you can while also taking in some spring training baseball?
Right. Well, Old Town Scottsdale is definitely a vibrant place to travel for your evening activities, whether it's dining or out for entertainment, including live music. It's kind of our version of a downtown Nashville scene. However, for families, I would recommend visiting, you know, charming areas of Gilbert, which is close to Mesa, has a cute downtown, more family friendly. And then if you want that shopping experience, of course, Scottsdale is a shopping destination as well. I would, you know, spend some time at Scottsdale Fashion Square, as well as north. We have Kierland Commons, which is also a great place for shopping as well as restaurants. So lots of different options, and certainly choosing where you want to stay. You want to consider how close are you to the stadiums. And then if you're staying more in Phoenix or in the valley where you can catch that light rail, it is a little bit of a walk from the Sloan Park Stadium in Mesa, about 20 minutes, but you'll definitely see a lot of people using the light rail to avoid having to drive to the stadium.
We're talking about taking a spring training trip to Arizona with Angie Rice, co-founder Boutique Travel Advisors in Scottsdale. And if you want to, if you spend a couple of days taking advantage of all the restaurants in and around Phoenix, and you want to get some physical activity in, what are some of the best places to go to just take a hike in those mountains around Phoenix?
Really good question. First of all, you have to know your capacity to hike. What is your endurance level and your ability to tolerate heat? Because it can still be very hot that time of year. If you're an active person that's used to hiking, maybe you're a marathon runner, I would absolutely recommend Payeskowa Peak or Camelback, which is centrally located. However, if you want a more leisurely hike and also have the ability to kind of, you know, meander the mountain area in a vehicle, stopping and taking photos and doing shorter hikes, I would highly recommend South Mountain. And then if you have enough time, I highly recommend also considering a visit to Tucson, which is south of Scottsdale, or going up north, whether it's to Flagstaff. Now, those of you coming from Chicago may want to avoid snow, but if you want that opportunity to ski, oftentimes you can ski this time of year in Flagstaff. And then Sedona and the national parks are also popular ways to complement a spring training experience in the valley.
And of course, if you're flying down from Chicago, Angie, chances are you can drop in on several of your Chicagoan friends who have moved down to Arizona to retire and escape the cold weather. Angie, thank you for joining us today. Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, based in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online, travelbta.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
It's 60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Stock Picker Monday, and joining us with a pair of investment ideas is Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park. Thank you for joining us today, Chris. Two selections today, and the first one is Universal, but we're not talking about the studio and theme park.
You're right. So actually, I have two that are going to be in the same genre. So if you know, it's agribusiness, it's tobacco, but both of these plays have an amazing PE ratio and dividends north of 6%. So let's dive in. Let's start with Universal, as you say. What I like about Universal Corp is that they have two segments of their operation. One of them is obviously tobacco, everything related to tobacco, procuring, processing, packing, storing. But then they have an ingredients operation segment that procures raw materials globally, processes the raw materials through a variety of value-added manufacturing processes to produce specialty plant-based ingredients, which is hot, including fruits, veggies, botanical extracts, and flavorings for consumer packaged goods. So I like this play because it has a 6.1 dividend, and the PE ratio is only 10.79. So, you know, if you don't want to overpay and you want a decent dividend, you might take a look at Universal Corp.
And also trading right now for $52.67 a share as well.
Yeah. So a little less expensive is the next one, which is Imperial Brands. Now, this one operates also two business sections. So they have next generation products as well as just traditional selling of tobacco. The next gen products distributes to different manufacturers, including Imperial Brands. And they offer things like smoking accessories and a Golden Virginia fine cut tobacco, Rizla rolling papers. You know, if you're selling rolling papers, you also have to think about wacky tobacco too, right? Backwoods cigars, oral nicotine offerings. The other thing about this is that the PE ratio is only 9.34 and the dividend's a little nicer. It's 6.75. So all in all, decent corporations, very good price, excellent dividend.
Smoke if you got them. Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park. Thank you for joining us today. Her selections today, Universal Corp and Imperial Brands PLC.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.